I believe when Jesus gave us the parable about the 10 virgins, and he told us that at midnight there was a cry came that, behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him. I believe that for those of us who believe and know the truth, there is a cry at midnight to let us know that Jesus is about to come. I've seen a lot of people say, you know, they're not sure. They've heard that Jesus is coming for 2,000 years, and even people in our own church today that have grown up there and they've been there 50, 60 years, and they're wondering, you know, could it go on another 40 or 50 years? Or there's a lot of speculation. I hear people say every week that, had someone tell me last week, you and I will never live to see Jesus come, a man told me. And I believe that that's incorrect. You know, I believe we're going to see him come very soon. The signs all around us tell us that. And yet at the same time, we've been having earthquakes and famines and things for a long time now, you know. So I believe that Revelation 17 contains information for us, the remnant church at the end, and I believe it's a very special prophecy to us, and this morning I want to go through that with you. Revelation chapter 17 and verse 1 says, "There came one of the seven angels which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, Come hither, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great whore that sitteth upon many waters." And of course, we know in the Bible that God has compared his people, his church, to a comely and delicate woman. Jeremiah 6:2 says, "I have likened the daughter of Zion to a comely and delicate woman." So as we deal with this power that is represented by the great harlot, we understand as a people that that represents a group of people or a church who claims to believe in God and be his people, and yet they have gone away from him after other things. It also says that she sits upon many waters, and it's nice that in the same chapter the angel tells us what that means. Revelation 17:15 says, "He saith unto me, The waters which thou sawest where the whore sitteth are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues." So the waters symbolize people of every nation and language here on our earth today. Chapter 2 of Revelation 17 says, "With whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication." We know that the kings of the earth, in fact, we're going to have some pictures later there, they definitely have been having relationships with the Roman Catholic Church that are not correct. You know, the Roman Catholic Church actually has an ambassador to the United States, and we've sent an ambassador to the Vatican, and our ambassador there is just like our ambassador to France or England or those other things. They're given the same ear, at least. We listen to them, maybe more than some of the other countries, but even as the big countries like Russia and people. And there's no other church on earth that has that kind of power on earth today. So they truly are having relationships with the kings of the earth that are not proper. And we know that the being drunk with the wine of her fornication represents our fellow inhabitants of earth who have been born into and have grown up in the churches that don't practice the truth. There's a lot of people out there today who were born into churches that keep Sunday and don't understand many of the things we understand, and those people are drunk with those false teachings. They don't know any better. It's actually an excellent comparison, because just like a drunk person can walk down the street and they have no idea what they're doing, the people today who are drunk with the false teachings of spiritual Babylon don't have any idea that they're doing wrong until they're told that. And unfortunately, the message is slow to get to many of them. Verse 3, the angel continues on, John continues on, it says, "He carried me away into the spirit, in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet-colored beast, full of names of blasphemy, having seven heads and 10 horns. So John says he saw a woman, and she's seated upon a scarlet-colored beast. The beast has 7 heads and 10 horns. Now, this is the description that is always given of Satan here in the book of Revelation, and I want to go read a couple of those verses with you so we get the proper context. In Revelation chapter 12 and verse 3, it says, "There appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having seven heads and ten horns, and seven crowns upon his heads." And then verse 9 of that chapter tells us the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan. So in Revelation, Satan is always pictured as the beast, and he is always pictured with seven heads and ten horns. And we notice in Revelation chapter 12 here that it says that he had crowns upon his heads. And we know that this represents the time in which Satan attempted to destroy Jesus, and that was under the power of the Romans. And if you actually look up the Roman Empire when it began, it had exactly seven kings before it became a republic in 509 B.C. So Satan is pictured there, and you notice there that he has the crowns are upon the seven heads. Then when we get over to chapter 13 of Revelation, verse 1, it says, "I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and upon his horns ten crowns, and upon his heads the names of blasphemy." The ten horns, we know, represent the ten divisions of the Roman Empire when it was broken into ten. The horns represent those people. And at the time this prophecy is beginning, it's talking about the breakup of the Roman Empire. And when the seat of power was moved from Rome to Constantinople, the popes basically took the place of the Roman kings, the Roman rulers. And so in this text, as we begin this time period, the horns have the crowns upon them because it was the barbarian tribes of Europe, their kings, that were ruling at this time. And of course we have the English with us today and the Spain and the others still. But it says that upon the heads were nothing but the names of blasphemy. And that's representing the popes. The popes were in existence at this time, but they didn't have any power. They didn't have the crowns upon their heads. They were soon to have some power, and they did exercise a certain amount of power over the kings, but yet they really just had the names of blasphemy upon them because they had taken these great titles for themselves. So at this time period in the book of Revelation, the ten horns have the crowns upon them, and the heads had nothing but the names of blasphemy. So this is the, you know, in the early 300-500 range of AD. Now as we go back to chapter 13 and verse 3, it says, "I saw one of his seven heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast." We believe that the seven heads there represent popes, and the one who has the deadly wound was the Pope in 1798 when he was taken captive by Napoleon's general. So we can see there that the heads do represent the popes, and the horns represent the political powers on earth at these times. As we continue on in Revelation chapter 17 and verse 4, it says, "The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication." Really, we couldn't have had a better description given by John of the colors of the woman, this great church. Her colors are purple and scarlet. She is known for that. They take great pride in the cardinals wearing their red, the archbishops in their purple. Pope Benedict XVI there decked out in his attire with his beautiful gold. Says that she's decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. There's so much gold in the Vatican that, you know, it's countless. We couldn't even begin to imagine the wealth that they've stacked up there in this place. And of course, we're looking there at Bernini's high altar where the high mass is done every day. And if you look through the altar, you see the sun there in the east asp of the Vatican. A lot of people don't realize it, but the popes in the Middle Ages were deep into what we call white witchcraft, ceremonial witchcraft. And when these things were built, and they were doing these things, they actually built this so that the sun would shine in onto that high altar where they were doing their things, because they believed that there was a blessing there from the sun. They were involved deeply in the sun worship. And I didn't put it in here today because we don't really have a lot of time, but in witchcraft, they believe that they need to get inside a circle to do all their ceremonies. And if you look down from the dome onto this altar, it's circled and many, many circles there, and they believe that gives them protection. This was actually built for sun worship and pagan worship. And here's a little closer view of the, called the East Asp there. It's interesting, all the pews face the sun. Everyone sits there, they're facing the sun. And of course, much more gold in this picture as we look at it. Verse 5 of Revelation 17 continues on. It says, "And upon her forehead was a name written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth." Now, as we get into this verse, we need to consider when she became Babylon the Great and when she became the mother of the harlots here upon the earth. We believe that when the Protestant Reformation began and Martin Luther was called out and began his work, that at that time, that was the leading light that God was using. That's not to say that the Waldenses and other people weren't out there doing right, but that was the movement God was leading. So, and we know that as they refused to go any further in the progression of truth, that God moved on and raised up another church to go further and further, and later on they learned they needed to be baptized correctly by immersion, and the Baptists were born. So at that time, those churches were not mothers of the or children of the harlot. They had come out of there, but yet God was leading them. So we have to look for a time when Babylon becomes Babylon the Great, and a time a little later in history when we could truly say that they are her harlot daughters. In verse 6 it says, "I saw the woman drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great admiration. And the angel said unto me, Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath the 7 heads and 10 horns. So he first told him that the woman was drunken with the blood of the saints. And if we knew someone who had killed someone and they were telling us that it was okay and all that, we could proverbially say that they are drunk with those people's blood. And of course, we know that the Catholic Church killed, some people say, as many as 50 million people during the Dark Ages, and they really don't make much apology for it yet today. A little bit here and there, but their official doctrine is that those people were heretics and they received what they had coming. So truly today they are drunk with the blood of the saints. Now, the angel told John, the second part I haven't read, "I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her." So he told John that he was going to explain something to John about this power and about what was going on. In Mark chapter 4, Jesus said unto them, "Unto you it is given to know the mystery of the kingdom of God, but unto them that are without, all these things are done in parables." Revelation chapter 12 and verse 17 says, "The dragon was wroth with the woman and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus." Revelation 19:10 tells us the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. It is the spiritual discernment given us by the Holy Spirit that allows us to understand the prophecies. So we really could read Revelation 12 and verse 17 as, "The dragon was wroth with the church and went to make war with the last little group of the Christian church, which keep the Ten Commandments of God and therefore have been given spiritual discernment to help them properly understand the prophecies." And I believe that our church has been given that because we do keep God's Ten Commandments and have done what He's asked us to do. As we continue on there in chapter 17, verse 7, it says, "The angel said unto me, Wherefore didst thou marvel? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carrieth her, which hath the 7 heads and 10 horns. Verse 8, "The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit." And the word pit there is actually added by the translators. It's not in the Greek text. The word bottomless means the depths. So really this verse says that the beast is going to ascend out of the depths. And if you were receiving this vision and in the presence of heaven, it would seem like the earth was definitely the depths compared to the throne of God in heaven. So it says, "He shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition, which means destruction. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is. So it tells us here that the beast is going to ascend. He's going to appear, and the people who live here on the earth are going to wonder or be amazed when they see him. Now, as we consider the beast, God said about himself in chapter 1 and verse 8 of Revelation, "I am Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the ending, saith the Lord, which is and which was and which is to come, the Almighty." So God has said that he was and is to come. So our Creator was and is to come. The beast Satan was and is not and yet is. See, is not and yet is actually a lie. You can't not be here and yet be here. But this is the way Satan works. He did this same thing in the Garden of Eden. Satan wasn't in the Garden of Eden because you couldn't see him, in a way. And yet he was there because he was working through the serpent. And today he's working through his church. So he is not, and yet he is. And that same word that is translated beast there, the beast that the people are going to see, in the book of Acts, it's used to describe Paul's ordeal when he was bitten by the serpent. Acts chapter 28 and verse 3, it says, "And when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire, there came a viper out of the heat and fastened on his hand. And when the barbarians saw the venomous beast hang on his hand." And that word beast right there means a fiery serpent. And it's the very same word that is used in Revelation to describe this beast who's going to appear here at the end. Revelation 17 and verse 8, one more time, it says, "The beast that thou sawest was and is not, and shall ascend out of the depths," or come in off of the earth, "and go into perdition. And they that dwell on the earth shall wonder, whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is." So eventually the people are going to behold Satan, and we know that. Paul tells us in 2 Corinthians 11:14, "And no marvel, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light." The Great Controversy tells us, page 624, "As the crowning act in the great drama of deception, Satan himself will personate Christ. In different parts of the earth, Satan will manifest himself among men as a majestic being of dazzling brightness, resembling the description of the Son of God." Satan is going to appear here at the end, and the people whose names aren't written in the book of life are definitely going to be deceived by him. So we continue on in chapter 17 and verse 9. It says, "Here is the mind which hath wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth." And of course, Rome is known as the city of seven hills. By the time the pagans moved, they had been begun in Babylon and moved to several other cities before they got to Rome. But when they built the city of Rome, they purposely circled seven hills with the wall of that city because they wanted to put one of the temples for their planet gods on top of a hill. So the city of Rome was especially built for this false type of worship, and it's known today as the city of seven hills. You can look it up in the Webster's Dictionary under the word seven, and you'll see several things, seven wonders of the world. As you look down through there, it'll say the seven hills of Rome, on and about which the city of Rome was built. So it says there are seven mountains, or seven places where the woman sitteth there at the city of Rome. The Greek actually, some of the Bibles translate a little better, they actually say that there are seven heads and seven kings, or seven mountains and seven kings. It has kind of a dual meaning, as we're going to see. So we continue on into verse 10. It says, "They are also seven kings. Five are fallen," or dead. "One is, and the other is not yet come. And when he cometh, he must continue a short space." Now, if we consider now when Babylon became Babylon the Great, we need to look at the timelines from history a little bit. We know that after the 1,260 years of papal supremacy, Napoleon gave them their deadly wound in the year 1798. In the year 1809, they also imprisoned Pope Pius VII. And their deadly wound continued to get worse for a period of time. Though they did have popes, they lost most of their land in 1860, most of the papal states taken from the church during the Italian unification. And up until that time, even after 1860, they left them the city of Rome, but they took all the land away because they had to reunify Italy. Then in 1870, Italian King Victor Emmanuel II seized the city of Rome. The Pope declared himself a prisoner in the Vatican, marking the beginning of the Roman question. And the Roman question was the question of what was going to happen to the Catholic Church. There are actually newspapers in Europe during that period of time that predicted that in 10 or 15 years, the Roman Catholic Church would not exist. Things had gotten so bad for them, their land had been taken away, they'd been stripped of their power, and then they were backed into the Vatican, just 108 acres, and they really were suffering the deadly wound. But it was a continuing wound, and it took many years to see its full things happen to them. Now, in the year 1929, when Mussolini became the dictator of Italy, they worked it around and got him in there. He signed what was called the Lateran Treaty, the agreement between Italy and the papacy, settling the 70-year stalemate. Italy paid the church 750 million lira and 1 billion in bonds. The Pope is formally recognized as the King of Vatican City, smallest nation on earth, thereby fully healing the wound. Mussolini couldn't even come up with enough cash in Italy to give them all the money he wanted to give them, so they had to sell 1 billion lira in bonds that the Italian people had to pay back over time. The Pope became king at that time of the Vatican. Now if we take and read this verse one more time, verse 10, Revelation chapter 17, says they are also seven kings, five are fallen, one is, and the other is not yet come, and when he cometh, he must continue a short space. Now if we look at the timeline after they became Babylon the Great, their first pope died in 1939 after the deadly wound was healed. Their second pope died in 1958. Not sure why that moved over on us. Their third pope was John the 23rd. Their fourth one was Paul the 6th. And in 1978, their fifth pope died, John Paul the 1st. In 1978, the pope who just now passed away, Pope John Paul the 2nd, was in existence. So we had five who had fallen and the one who is. And it's sad to me that this is only now being preached, because I believe the Lord gave us many years to understand this prophecy and preach it and use it to its full power, because it is very powerful, as you're going to see. But so we have to kind of look back on it today. But it was understood during the time when the one is. See, is present tense. So at the time this was understood, five would have had to have fallen and one would have to be at that time. So five had fallen and one was in existence. And verse 11 of Revelation 17 tells us, and the beast that was and is not, or Satan, even he is the eighth and is of the seven and goeth into perdition. Now if these were just eight men, God would have told us there were eight kings. But he separates the eighth one from the seventh, but he does tell us that he's of the seven, because when Satan comes back, he's going to give his blessing to this movement that he's been propelling along all this time. And he's going to give them his blessing. The Catholic Church has a book out there called The Keys of This Blood, in which Malachi Martin describes how the popes have passed down the keys that Jesus handed to Peter, and they've been passed down successively from pope to pope to pope, I believe about 260 of them now. And they describe in that book how when Jesus returns to earth, the last pope is going to bow down before Jesus, and he's going to hand the keys back to Jesus, and Jesus is going to take control. So when this pope we have now is gone, he doesn't have to die, because when Satan appears, there won't be any need for him anymore. It'll be as though Christ has returned to rule his church. We need to read these verses together now. Verse 12, there's actually a dual application to show us if this prophecy is in our day. Verse 12 continues on, and it says, the ten horns which thou sawest are ten kings. Now, are is also present tense, but it's plural. We are here today. So for this prophecy to be fulfilled at the same time that the one is, or the one pope was in existence, we would also have to be able to find these 10 other kings. Verse 12 says, "The 10 horns which I sawest are 10 kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These 10 kings shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful." So this tells us, for this to be correct, that there would have to be 10 kings in existence. When the one is, the 10 are. And as we go look at history, some of you may have heard of the Club of Rome report. It was created and released to the power elite back in September 17 of 1973. This plan circulated among the world leaders on September 17, 1973, would place the entire world under one government run by the United Nations. Under this plan, all nations would be part of one of the 10 divisions of the New World Order. This was done back in the 1970s, and I have copies of this report. In fact, I have some in the back there if anybody wants one. And in 1973, they have every nation on earth divided into these 10 kingdoms that they are going to rule the world in when they get to the end. They actually took every nation and put them in there, in those 10, how they will rule it. Now, even more interestingly is that, and there's a lot of places you can document this today, George Bush Sr., Russian President Gorbachev, and many of the other world leaders, and the 10 regional heads of the New World Order have been having secret meetings for many years. And this isn't any thing that is hard to find. You can find it on the internet and all kinds of things. They're meeting at Malta. It's a place that's very easy to defend for the United Nations. It's a little island just off the tip of Italy there. And they've been having these meetings there for a long time. And the world leaders go there and they have these conferences. And these 10 men are actually in existence. And there's actually a lot of books out there today speculating about who they are. There's a bunch of them you can get, and I could give you a few names of them. I won't do it at this time. But these 10 men are in existence today. So this prophecy is so amazing because it said that there would be 10 kings, but they wouldn't have received their kingdom yet. How often could you be honored like these men are honored, where they're going to rule under the United Nations like that, but they truly haven't received their kingdom yet? But the day is coming when they're going to receive that kingdom. They're actually tightening the noose on our world today as we speak. People don't realize what's going on, but the United Nations is using the United States. They want to bring us down so we'll be dependent upon them. And at the same time, they can't have any people like Saddam Hussein out there because he wouldn't buckle under to the New World Order and do what they want. So they're using us, the greatest superpower, to get rid of the last enemies of the New World Order. We're annihilating them one at a time and bringing the whole world under subjection to them. And it's doing a double purpose for them, because it's bankrupting the United States of America at the same time. And by the time they get finished with what they're doing, we'll need help from the United Nations. We'll probably still have military supremacy, but we're being brought down to the level so they can bring this all together. So this prophecy is exactly fulfilled. It said at the same time the one is, Pope John Paul II, the 10 are, the 10 leaders of the New World Order that will soon control the world and enforce the mark of the beast. If you think about this, it's amazing because, you know, Jesus said to the Jews in his time, if only you had known what was yours in the day that it was yours, and if only our church had known what God's given us in these prophecies a long time ago, we should have been preaching this prophecy from 1978, as soon as the Pope was seated, the one who is, and the 10 are. We should have been preaching this. We had 78, 88, 98, you know, 25 years there to preach this prophecy, but we really missed out on it because of the things that have been going on in the church and the spiritual apathy we've had there. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 10, Jesus says, "Because thou hast kept the word of my patience, I also will keep thee from the hour of temptation, which shall come upon all the world to try them that dwell upon the earth." You remember it said the kings would have power for 1 hour with the beast. And when they have power with him for an hour, it's going to be almost unbelievable what's going to occur at that time, but the Bible says, Jesus has promised that he will keep us from that hour of temptation. And it's important that we are overcoming our sins. He says in Revelation 3:5, "He that overcometh, the same shall be clothed in white raiment, and I will not blot out his name out of the book of life, but I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels." So if he tells us that if we overcome, he won't blot our name out of the book, the reverse is also true. If we don't overcome, there comes a day when he's going to blot our name out of the book. And the Bible tells us in Revelation 13:8, "And all that dwell upon the earth shall worship the beast, whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb, slain from the foundation of the world." When that day arrives, if your name is not left in the book, when the book is cleansed, you'll be given over to the power of the strong deception there at the end, and you will wander after the beast. So as we go back and look at this again, Revelation 17 and verse 10, where it told us, "There are also seven kings, five are fallen, and one is, the other is not yet come, and when he cometh, he must continue a short space." We live in the day when the other has come now. Pope Benedict XVI is now here, and the Bible tells us that he's only going to rule a short space. He only has a short period to go. Now, can we say that that's 1 year or 5 years or 10 years? There's nothing else in the Bible said like this, because God doesn't want us to speculate exactly how long it'll be. He just wants us to get ready. But I believe this is the cry that we're supposed to be giving. It's given to us to wake us up and help us realize that, you know, it's been a long time we've been hearing that Jesus is coming, but he really is coming soon, and this is to show us that that time is very short that's left for us here. Verse 11, "The beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth and is of the seven and goeth into perdition." So Satan will appear. He's going to meet this pope. This pope that we have today is going to meet Satan face to face, and they're going to believe that he's Jesus, and he's going to hand over control of the church. And I can see in my mind Satan reaching out and putting his hand on the pope's head and patting him and saying, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." And as the world looks on to see this, it's the almost overmastering delusion, it says, because it's going to be very hard to believe as we see all these things, you know. And if we went there to look at it, you know, it would be bad for us. We're not to look on these things and see them when they happen. Verse 12 tells us, "The ten horns which I sawest are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast." This is going to be right at the end when Satan arrives. They're going to have the New World Order all set up and ready to run. And just for a very short period of time there, they're going to have power with Satan. 1 hour, it says. Verse 13 says, "These have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. These ten kings shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful." That's a great text, because it tells us that these people are only going to have power 1 hour, and then they and Satan are going to make war with Jesus, because he's going to break through the clouds to deliver us. Verse 15, we've already read it, but I like to finish out the chapter. It says, "He saith unto me, the waters which thou sawest, where the whore sitteth, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues." Verse 16 says, "The ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God hath put in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of God should be fulfilled." It says that at a point in time, after they realize they're deceived, they're going to turn upon those that have deceived them, and they're going to hate the whore and take her things away from her, you know. And in that day, I'm sure no one will want to walk down the street during the seven last plagues with a priest's cloak upon, because you'd probably be killed right then, because as the people who have been deceived begin to receive the seven last plagues and they realize they're lost, they're going to begin to look for those who cause them to be lost. Verse 17 tells us, though, that this was God's will that this be done. See, God has to bring a test on the earth at the end. As long as he waits for people to grow old and die, you know, people tend to mellow out and do better towards the end. A lot of them do, not everyone. But there's a day coming when there's going to be 15-year-olds and 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 50-year-olds and 80-year-olds, and they're all going to, their probation's going to close at the same time. So God has to bring this upon so he can see what people are going to do. And at the end, there's going to be so much power with the ten kings and with Satan. And all God needs for us to do is make a decision in our mind whether we're going to go along with them to save our neck or whether we're going to stand for him. And when that decision's been made in everyone's mind, God doesn't have to wait for them to act out the decision. They've made the decision. So he has to bring this test on at the end of time so he can seal the living, either for destruction or salvation. Verse 18 says, "And the woman which thou sawest is that great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth." Truly the Vatican today reigns over the kings of the earth. They have for a long time. Through the Dark Ages, they had them convinced that they had power to send their soul to heaven or hell, and they wielded great power over the people at that time. Here's a picture of John Paul II as he's being buried. It utterly amazes me to see President Bush, former President Bush, President Clinton, all these people there bowing before the corpse of the Pope as he's been taken out. Truly, they do reign over the kings of the earth today. And I believe because of what we know about this prophecy and the fact that we've moved into the days when the one who will only go a short space is, I believe that right now, Revelation 18:1 begins to apply to our day. John says, "After these things, I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory." I believe that God is selecting his people today and sealing them to pour out the latter rain upon them so that he can get this done, because there's not a lot of time left. And it's up to us to be preparing ourselves so we can receive the latter rain. Verse 2, "He cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird." He's told us that they've fallen. You know, 15 or 20 years ago when you attempted to teach people about what the Catholic Church has done, change the law and all these things, a lot of people would say to you, you know, you're talking about some very holy people, because the priests were actually thought of as very righteous people. They'd given up everything for the church. But truly, Babylon is falling before our eyes today. God is bringing them down through the pedophilia scandal that's going on in the church. The Catholic Church today, we know they're going to still have great power at the end, but they're falling. Even their own people that have been there 70 years today, there's a lot of little old ladies that are not going down and taking communion, and they've been there many years every day, and they're very confused about what's going on. And so today, Babylon has fallen. It has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit. They're at the Vatican, they say they talk to the Virgin Mary every day. She's appearing there in closed chambers. They have priests that talk to her every single day. All over the earth, the statues are bleeding, weeping, all these things are going on. We know these are done by the demonic spirits. And a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. They've caged up all these men in the monasteries and all these things, and they've certainly become unclean. Jesus said to us in Matthew 18, "And whosoever shall receive one such little child in my name receiveth me. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believeth in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the sea." I tell you, it would be better for those priests that have been involved in all those things to have been had a millstone put around their neck and drowned in the sea rather than to have done what they have done. And truly, they have fallen today. They've fallen a long ways. Verse 3 says, "For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication." She does have her doctrine all over the earth today. Every nation is drunk of it. "The kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies." The Vatican has so much money today, we can't even imagine it. It's cloaked in many areas, but they're the largest holder in many of the stock markets. They own so much stuff you can't believe it. It amazes me when you look at the countries where they're strong. Go to old Mexico, the people are all in poverty because the Catholic Church has everybody collect the money and bring it to the church, And while the rest of the churches on earth pay their pastor and do these things and the money flows back through the community, the Vatican sends the bulk of it, or the churches send the bulk of it to the Vatican, and they just continue to stack it up over there. Verse 4, I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. If we're really full of the love of Jesus today and we love our fellow human beings, we've got to get out there immediately and preach to them that they have to come out of these churches. Time is very short for them. I've got some pictures we're going to see here in a minute. Their people are being deceived by all these statues and things that are going on. We never know, and the more time we wait, they're more caught up in what's going on there. And God is calling them out today. Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Reward her, even as she rewarded unto you, and double unto her double according to her works. See, we have some people today who say that to speak about the Catholic Church is wrong. It's not loving. It's not Christian. And we have to make sure we do it in a very good manner, full of Christian love and in the right way, and teach people these things in the proper order so that they can accept it, so it's not too much for them. But God's commanded us to double their works back unto them. That means to talk about what they've done, to reveal it to the world that they have changed the commandments, that they have murdered millions of people and they're planning to do it again if they can, and all these things. So we have a commandment from him to do that. In the cup which she hath filled, fill to her double. How much she hath glorified herself and lived deliciously, so much torment and sorrow give her. It is actually torment to them to hear the truth if they won't accept it, because it torments their mind. They hate it, and it does bring sorrow upon them. And as I said, it has to be done in the right way, but God has commanded us to give this back. For she saith in her heart, I sit a queen and am no widow, and shall see no sorrow. Therefore shall her plagues come in one day, death and mourning and famine, and she shall be utterly burned with fire, for strong is the Lord God who judgeth her. Verse 13 continues and says, and cinnamon and odors and ointments and frankincense and wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and beasts and sheep and horses and chariots and slaves and souls of men. It's talking about the things that are going to depart from the Catholic Church. You know, they're the only ones on earth who have ever had the audacity to say that they could control where your soul went. They've truly traded in the souls of men. There's no doubt about it. They've made a merchandise of it. And at the end of that chapter, it tells us, the light of the candle shall shine no more at all in thee, and the voice of the bridegroom and of the bride shall be heard no more at all in thee. For thy merchants, the people selling her ideas, their priests, thy merchants were the great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. Now this is after the fact, but it's telling us at the end that it was their sorcery that they're going to use to deceive the whole world.
Accountable for all the lost, because if they hadn't corrupted Christianity, we'd only have to go out and give Christianity to five other people, and the work would be done. But they've corrupted it, so they're held accountable for it. I want to talk just a little bit about the sorcery as we're ending here. If we go back to Acts chapter 8, it records after the stoning of Stephen, they begin to scatter, and verse 4 says, therefore they that were scattered abroad went everywhere preaching the word. Then Philip went down to the city of Samaria and preached Christ unto them. And the people with one accord gave heed unto those things which Philip spake, hearing and seeing the miracles which he did. For unclean spirits, crying with loud voice, came out of many that were possessed with them, and many taken with palsies, and that were lame were healed, and there was great joy in that city. But there was a certain man called Simon, which beforetime in the same city used sorcery and bewitched the people of Samaria, giving out that himself was some great one, to whom they all gave heed from the least to the greatest, saying, this man is the great power of God. That's what we're seeing happen to us right now. I encourage you to take your computer and get on the internet and just use one of the search engines and put in weeping and a plus sign and then put statues in there, you'll be amazed at the thousands of sites that will come up with that. These statues are weeping and bleeding all over the earth, and people are saying that must be God telling us that that's his true church. The sorcery they're using, they're drawing the people back in. And it says, this man, to him they had regard, because that of a long time he had bewitched them with sorceries. The time really isn't long that's left for us here on earth to finish what we should have been doing a long time ago. That's not to say that some haven't been doing it, but as a whole, we need to do a lot more. This is a picture of one of their statues that are weeping blood. And folks, they've had cameras on some of these statues and watched them for days and weeks and months. There's nobody putting blood on these statues in the morning before they unlock the doors of the church. There's blood oozing out of the stone. Demonic spirits are doing these things. They're occurring all over the earth. In fact, I was amazed this week as I was looking this up, almost every state I was able to see in 5 minutes, almost every state in the United States that has a bleeding statue in it, and how the people are thronging there. Some of the places have said they're having to take a busload of priests down there just so they can have enough of them there to give out the Eucharist to all these people. 20,000 people, it says, a day are visiting some of these sites where these statues are bleeding. It's absolutely unbelievable what's going on with these statues. It tells us that the end is really, really near. It's right upon us. We're in the days of the Pope who's going to go a short space, and God is beginning to release them to use their sorcery to deceive the world. Not everybody's heard the truth, so he's holding it back in check to a certain degree. Some of these statues are just gross, really, as you see them. The blood oozing out of the stone. People are coming in contact with the supernatural. And I put this picture of this lady on here. As I looked at her, my heart kind of goes out to her, but you can see, to me, that looks like demonic possession. As she stands there and looks up at these statues. These people are being deceived more and more and more. And if we really have the love of Jesus in us, we have to go out there now and proclaim the fall of Babylon. We've got to get it done. When God took down the walls of Jericho, he told all the people to gird their sword upon them and go up and take the city. And he's brought Babylon down for us today so that we can go out and preach against them. And our sword today is supposed to be our Bible, and we have to wield it in a very loving, good manner. But God's given us the ammunition. And you know what, if we don't love these people enough to go help them, I believe it shows that the love of God really isn't in us. And I don't believe we'll do anything of heaven. So I don't believe the latter rain maybe has been poured out upon God's people to finish the work yet, but I believe it's coming very soon. That's what's told, not to wait for it to be poured out, but to be getting ready for it, because he says the drops are already beginning to fall. So we know they're coming for us today. We've got to get ready to go, folks. Let's pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be thy great name. We thank you for your wonderful word. We thank you for these beautiful prophecies that you've given to us right here at the end of time to cure us and strengthen our faith, to know that your coming is very near and that all this will soon pass. So I ask that you bless us today and pour out your Spirit upon us in a very special way. Strive upon us that we are overcoming our sins and doing what's right, so we can receive your latter rain and be sealed as one of your people. Bless us today and bless all those out there who haven't heard your message yet, but that will be yours. In Jesus' holy name we ask thy blessing. Thy will be done, Almighty Father. Amen.